Today, Australia's Titanic moment approaches as spin overrides reality. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics World. Now, this post covering finance and prop news. I really love Australia, but if you strip back the political spin, it's clear Australia faces a weak economy ahead based on a rising structural deficit and falling productivity. The Titanic and icebergs springs to mind as an unsinkable ship sank. Strong migration, government support for households and a growing public sector will not be enough to turn this ship around. We really need some more structural reforms, including tax reform. But that seems, well, frankly, unlikely. Instead, we get extra doses of spin and half-truths while still heading for the disaster ahead. As I've been highlighting, the real issue that Australia is facing is centred on fading productivity, which leads to higher inflation and lower real wages at a time when government spending across all levels of government is higher than it was in the 1980s. That's outside of the pandemic. To bring this into sharp relief, the IMF just released their staff concluding statement of the 2025 Article 4 mission to Australia, which you could think of as an annual health check for the Australian economy. And there are some interesting alignments here between the recent recommendations that they've made and the ideas generated in the three-day productivity workshop in Canberra some time back, which Treasurer Jim Chalmers led off, but which seems to have, well, gone pretty much nowhere now. After the round table, Chalmers laid out three guiding principles for any future tax reform. It had to ensure a fair go for working people, including in intergenerational equity terms, incentivize business investment, and be simpler and more sustainable. Now, the IMF praised the Economic Roundtable as an important initiative, but urged the Albanese government to turn the talks into action. It's essential to maintain momentum with clear implementation plans, the Washington-based fund said. And by the way, in passing, the IMF described Labour's income tax cut worth about $268 from July 2026 and $506 from July 2027 as well, modest. In other words, this won't solve the real economic dilemma we face. Now, while the government announced that it would fast-track environmental approvals for major projects, freeze the National Construction Code, streamline approvals for 8,000 homes, accelerate foreign investment approvals for trustee investors, scrap 500 uses tariffs, and adopt artificial intelligence to public service. It is also, of course, discussing a road charge user basis for electric vehicles with the states. This is all small beer and is not going to really move the dial, but is another example of performative politics, which means seem to be doing something, if not something substantive. Now, of course, the IMF is founded on neoliberal sensitivities, so we shouldn't be surprised to see that they suggest that the government expand the 10% goods and services tax and reintroduce a mining tax, which, of course, contributed to the downfall of Labour Prime Minister Kevin Rudd 15 years ago, thanks to the power of big business to set the agenda. The IMF report suggests that the extra money raised could help fund tax cuts for workers and companies, which could boost the incentive to work and increase business investment. Comprehensive tax reform and greater spending efficiency can maintain fiscal sustainability, enhance economic resilience, and boost productivity, the IMF said. Now, they did consult Treasury and the Reserve Bank in the formulation of the report. The IMF reiterated its call to replace stamp duty on property purchases with a broad-based land tax to improve housing affordability, as well as government measures to boost the supply of homes. And while noting Australia was managing a soft economic landing amid an uncertain global outlook, the IMF said the government should embark on a series of reforms to taxation, the budget, technology, competition, labour markets, and the energy transition to revive stagnant productivity. And by the way, the IMF endorsed recent calls from former Treasury Secretary Ken Henry and former RBA Governor Philip Lowe for the government to adopt stricter budget rules to put it on a more sustainable footing and to address the decade of forecast deficits. If structural spending pressures intensify in the future, clearer fiscal anchors could help to safeguard fiscal sustainability, the IMF said. The IMF urged that the government press ahead with making the $52 billion National Disability Insurance Scheme more sustainable amid wrangling between Health Minister Mark Butler and the states over diverting children with development delays to a new program called Thriving Kids. Expenditure reforms should continue to target efficiency savings in growing cost areas such as the NDS and aged care and protect productive infrastructure investment, the IMF said. NDIS payments, by the way, accelerated in the December quarter as thousands of young boys with autism continued to flock to the scheme that is reporting cost inflation well above the government's target. The indebted state and territory budgets should also face greater scrutiny from the Commonwealth through an expanded oversight role for the Parliamentary Budget Office or the Federal Treasury, the IMF said. Now, once again, we got some weasel words from Chalmers, who said on Wednesday that the government was facing very real fiscal pressures. Chalmers said the IMF has backed Australia's budget and fiscal strategy at a time of global uncertainty. This is the soft landing we have been planning for, preparing for, and hoping for. We know the best way to build on all the progress we've made is to make our economy more resilient and more productive. And he said the IMF report was a powerful endorsement of the government's economic management, but dismissed the tax proposals. We don't agree with all of the proposals in the IMF report around the GST or some of these other tax matters, he said. Now, of course, he was on form with the spin. For example, after the wage price release this week, he boasted that Labour had delivered the longest period of consecutive real wage growth in almost a decade, following 8 consecutive quarters of annual real wage growth. And yet, as I showed in my earlier show, real wages fell by 0.5% in the third quarter of 2025, and they're tracking levels that we last saw in 2011. Australian real wages have only actually recovered by 1.1% since bottoming in the March quarter of 2023. And the RBA's latest statement on monetary policy forecasts little rebound by the end of 2027, with real wages still expected to be tracking to those in the end of 2011. Not good. And worse, to add insult to injury, the strongest recent wage growth has come from the public sector, while private sector wage growth has collapsed. And wages are also growing significantly faster in the so-called non-market or government-funded sectors of public administration and safety, healthcare and social assistance, and education than in market sector industries. And here it's also worth remembering that the CPI was lowered than more it would have been, thanks to the $5.3 billion of energy bill subsidies, which have reduced electricity prices. Without Labour's energy subsidies, real retail electricity prices would have averaged 16% higher since the middle of 2023, meaning headline CPI would also have been higher and real wages even lower. And in another dose of spin in his media release, he said, at the same time, we've overseen the creation of 1.2 million jobs and stronger employment growth than any major advanced economy. And around 4 out of every 5 of those jobs have been created in the private sector. The private sector recovery that we have been planning and preparing for is taking place. And it's clear that private demand has been the key driver of growth for 3 consecutive quarters. Well, yet again, Jim Chalmers is being very loose with the truth, since he's including government-funded jobs in the non-market sector. That means private sector jobs in healthcare, public administration, social assistance and education as private sector jobs. And Alex Joyner from IFM Investors actually bells the cat rather nicely. There were 457,911 private sector jobs in the government-aligned sectors created between the first quarter of 2023 and the second quarter of 2025. That's 55% of total jobs created. If you add in public servants into the mix there, 650,526 non-market jobs were created between the first quarter of 2023 and the second quarter of 2025. That's, wait for it, 78% of the total. That's nowhere near one in four in the private sector, of course. Of the total, 1,155,000 jobs created over this period, 617,100, 53%, were in the non-market industries of healthcare, social assistance, education, and public administration and safety. So however you cut the data, Jim Chalmers' claim that Labour has powered the private sector and the private sector is powering the economy is categorically false. It's all about government spending through the non-market sector. Such government spending is also killing Australia's productivity growth, as I mentioned earlier. And the truth is a big part of Australia's economic malaise circles back to the fundamental lack of fiscal responsibility in Canberra. And so, yes, the latest report from the IMF is yet another wake-up call for Labour to get on with the pressing task of exercising some budget discipline as it stares down the barrel at a decade of deficits. Despite these dire forecasts, the government has disappointingly displayed a lack of enthusiasm for genuine, real fiscal repair. But at the same time, the government has broken its own fiscal strategy rules for saving more than 50% of upgrades to forecast tax receipts. Instead, it has clung to the delusion that it can endlessly borrow and spend. The truth, though, is that the more radical approach which is needed to turn the ship is unlikely to be politically palatable in the current environment. Anthony Albanese has already swept off the table calls by economists to broaden the GST. He certainly will not have forgotten the bigger opposition to a federal government resource tax in 2010 from the West Australian government and the iron ore industry, which led quickly to Labour's beheading of Kevin Rudd as Prime Minister in his first term. Ultimately, efforts to make room for tax cuts will prove to be a self-defeating exercise unless the government embraces fiscal discipline. The imperative for restraint must equally apply to state and territory governments too, whose balance sheets are sinking into the red. Yes, Victoria, I'm thinking of you. The truth is, reversing Australia's drift into fiscal complacency will require political honesty and a discipline that has so far been absent. Less spin, more real action, please. But the trouble is, the longer Canberra and the states remain in fiscal paralysis, the narrower the nation's options will be to chart a path to stronger growth, higher living standards, and to respond to future economic shocks. And this is true whichever party is in power. So frankly, Australia's economy seems headed for the rocks in a Titanic-sized disaster. And no amount of spin will solve that iceberg-sized problem. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.